Welcome back to season two of Snubs and Dubs, where we've been talking about the snubs and dubs of the 87th Academy Award for Best Picture. I'm your host, Kyle Tobiasen, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Jason Miller. Jason, how you doing?
Oh, living life. Long weekend coming up?
Yep.
Hell yeah.
Gonna boys.
Watch the Oilers win tonight?
Oh yeah.
Crack of some course. Cold ones. hell yeah, boys. It's gonna be good. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good too. Looking forward to this long weekend. Very excited to get some extra sleep.
Oh yeah.
But yeah.
You deserve it. Quick question before we start here.
Yes.
Now, we've done a similar kind of like survey question before with the wheels / doors.
Right.
Now, if you had to choose between A, fighting an orangutan once a year with a sword, B, you have to fight a chicken every time you get in your car, what do you take?
Oh. I think of going the orangutan once a year.
Now, let me throw in some considerations here.
I feel like you could get good at with a sword. In a year, and then by the time that I'm battling each time, it kind of gets a bit easier. Because is it like to the death? Like, do I kill this orangutan every time?
Oh yeah, that's assumed. It would be okay. To the death in each side. Now, let me add some facts in here.
Right.
If you kill the chicken, you just have chicken meat every time you get. If you're hungry, you just get in your car, kill the chicken.
Right.
You've gone hunting.
Yeah.
Also, if you drive to work, that is a good adrenaline boost, get you going in the morning kind of thing.
Oh, but I don't drive to work, really.
No,
I mostly work from home, so.
Okay, well, ignore that.
I might do the chicken then.
Yeah, because you can call it quits on driving at any time and exit yourself from the equation.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually, you're going to be slow enough that orangutan's getting you. And in all honesty, I don't like my chances with an orangutan. Yes, the sword's in question. It's also not clear who has the sword from the prompt that I saw.
I thought it was both people. Both of them have a sword.
Maybe. But either way, you have to imagine the orangutan does not know how to use the sword. Probably dropping that immediately. So that's irrelevant if the orangutan has a sword or not. I'm team chicken.
Okay.
Because of the cheap source of protein.
Yeah.
Because you can walk away from that equation at any time.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I want to know that every driver on the road is capable enough to kill a chicken to be there. This is a very effective road test because you can only kill a chicken for so long.
Yeah.
At some point, you are too old and slow to kill a chicken, and you probably shouldn't be driving at that point either. So I think the world's a better place if you have to, in hand-to-hand combat, kill a chicken every time you enter your vehicle.
Fair point.
Yes. Yep.
It would also make more aware drivers, which maybe would reduce accidents on the road.
Yeah. You can't have road rage after you just finished murdering an animal. It's out of you. You're now empty. You are slightly traumatized every time you need to get groceries.
Oh, man. Did you watch anything this week?
No.
No?
I've been mostly thinking about chicken murder. How about you, Kyle? What did you watch?
The only other thing I watched was RoboCop.
Interesting.
Watched it for the first time. I got a brand new special edition Arrow 4K RoboCop edition thing. Very fancy and very nice. Very cool. Movie? Mm. Very good.
Amazing.
A lot of fun. Very 80s.
Yes.
And I just enjoyed every minute of it.
That's good to hear. I've also, now it's not also, but previous to you watching it, I've also never watched it.
Yeah.
So it's good to know that it's just a fun 80s flick.
Yeah.
Possibly romp.
But yeah, other than this movie, that was all that I watched this week.
Well, that's okay. You know, a quieter watching week. Mm-hmm. Nothing wrong with that.
But of course, season two of Snubs and Dubs is covering the films from the year 2014. For episode 16, we are talking about the next Best Picture nominee of this season, Selma. Have you seen it before?
Yes, we saw it together in theaters, I do believe. A little South Cinema action.
Hell yeah.
I think it was like a limited showing, like we had to go there to watch it.
Yeah, it was probably one of like the only locations playing it in this area.
But and I remember it being a pretty quiet crowd.
Yeah.
This didn't get a lot of like advertising or even that big of a run.
Yeah. I have some box office numbers later, but I even had to like go to the next year's box office just because of how it released.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's still a 2014 film, but its box office was in 2015 because it mostly released wide in 2015.
Yeah. And so, I remember seeing that when I was looking it up that it's like a 2015 film, but like it's 2014. So shut up.
It's like
website.
It's the one thing that I don't like as much about like movies in this type of time frame, like the 2010s, 2000s, mm-hmm. compared to like last season, because last season is pretty cut and dry.
Yeah.
Like if it released in 96, like it's where it's going to be. But mm-hmm. now it's like, oh, well, some of them released in 2013, but only released wide in 2014. Some of them only released in 2014, but like not wide enough to be considered for, you know, the full run. So they count in 2015. It's so fussy, but
Hollywood execs, get a calendar. Try one of those out.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that, because I actually don't remember watching this in theaters. I do remember seeing it, mm-hmm. but I don't remember the theater experience of this. Unlike, for some reason, The Imitation Game, I remember us going to quite vividly.
Yeah.
But this one, I don't know. Maybe it's just like the movie itself, but like I remembered watching it. I just couldn't remember the experience.
Yeah. I remember the theater experience because of one particular thing that happened. And I remember it because there was a dude, a couple, like a row in front of us or something, who was like talking for most of the movie. Mm. And at one point, I leaned in, was like, hey man, can you be a bit quieter? And then that, and I think he said like, sorry, whatever, and we moved on.
Yeah.
And then after the movie, when we were all getting up to leave, he like turned around to talk to me, and it was like a black man and his son who were there. And he apologized to me because he's like, I was explaining to my son, like how this, how like the relevance and everything that affects him, and like, and all this history about that. And I felt like the biggest piece of shit. I felt so fucking bad, dude. Like, and he apologized to me. And I'm like, no, I didn't realize what was happening. I just knee-jerk reaction heard talking in a movie and was like, hey, pal, please be a little quieter. I felt like the worst. I was a pile of garbage. I felt so bad. So that's a lot of why I remember watching this in theaters.
That makes a lot more sense.
Me being an absolute jerk. Not understanding the scenario. Man.
But you hadn't seen it since then?
No, I haven't. I haven't even really thought about it since then until we rewatched it. And I don't know why.
Because it's not like, we'll get to it, but it's not a bad movie.
I honestly really liked it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, if you were interested in Selma, I've included the links to the physical media related to it in the show notes. If you buy through those links, it'll help out the show. Or if you have any other Amazon shopping to do, follow the general links to help out the show in the process. A reminder that this is going to be a spoiler-filled conversation. So if you haven't seen Selma yet, or you don't know about the real historical events, go ahead and do so. I've also included time codes in the show notes so you can skip ahead or around to your heart's desire. But without further ado, let's get into it.
Dun, dun, dun.
Selma was directed by Ava DuVernay. It was written by Paul Webb based on the real 1965 Selma to Montgomery voting rights marches. A little asterisk here, although she receives no writing credit, Ava DuVernay claimed to have done a 90% rewrite of Paul Webb's original script, including all of King's speeches, which sounds interesting, but I'll get into a different fact about all King's speeches later. It stars David Oyelowo as Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Carmen Ejogo as Coretta Scott King, Tom Wilkinson as President Lyndon B. Johnson, Giovanni Ribisi as Lee White, Cuba Gooding Jr. as Fred Gray in like one scene, like two scenes, Tim Roth as Governor George Wallace, Oprah Winfrey as Annie Lee Cooper, and also people like Tessa Thompson, Common, Lakeith Stanfield, Martin Sheen, also in just two scenes, Coleman Domingo, and Jeremy Strong are just also in this movie. So pretty stacked cast.
Yeah, there's a lot of big names in there.
Yeah, people like Tessa Thompson and Lakeith Stanfield, they've kind of blown up, but 2014 was a big year for those two. Like, this was kind of their start. Mm-hmm. Like, especially Tessa Thompson, she had this and Dear White People this year.
Right.
And these were kind of the two big movies that really propelled her career. She had done stuff before, but like these were the two that I think brought her onto a lot of people's radar.
Mm-hmm.
It has a runtime of 128 minutes and it released on December 25th, 2014, Christmas Day, after premiering at the AFI Fest on November 11th, 2014. So, what do you think of Selma?
I think this movie has been done dirty by how forgotten it was after that year.
Yeah.
When I was rewatching it, I was actually quite taken with it. Like, it's a very well put together movie that has like a really heartfelt story.
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised it didn't leave a bigger impact than it did. Even like, it was also a Best Picture nominated film, but it's kind of like has no relevance, which is like, it deserves a lot more. It should still be in like the public sphere.
Yeah. Well, what surprised me was this is the first major theatrical release of a for Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. in like a biopic.
Yeah.
And like, you'd think that that would make it even more historically impactful and have like a bigger impact onto the public consciousness. Mm-hmm. But like, it doesn't. It's kind of disappeared strangely. Yeah.
And like, it was really good.
Yeah.
Like it tells a really good story, of course.
Mm-hmm.
It stays, from what I like kind of looked into afterwards, very historically accurate,
yeah.
but it does it in still a way that captures your attention.
Yeah.
More so than like Imitation Game did. And it's just a really well shot movie. And like every part of it, I'm just like, it's one that I really sink into each shot and each scene mm-hmm. for. But I don't know how it's kind of been forgotten since.
Yeah. Well, and especially like the performances. Like, I think David Oyelowo, like, he's kind of the headliner in this one. Like,
yeah.
he outshines pretty much everyone else. And mm-hmm. even though you have like big names like Oprah.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he kind of becomes the only one that people remember from this movie.
And granted, he had a very good performance.
Yeah,
he was really captivating in it.
And he was really campaigning to play this role. We'll get into that a little bit later. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he really worked to get into this movie. But do you want to get into the plot?
Yeah, let's get a little plot up.
All right. Well, we're going to just run right through the plot. If you do not need a reminder of Selma, you can skip ahead. We have the time codes in the show notes, but go ahead, Jason.
All right. So we start in 1964, where Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference accepts a Nobel Peace Prize. King later meets with Lyndon B. Johnson and asks for federal legislation to allow black citizens to register to vote unencumbered. But the president responds that, although he understands Dr. King's concerns, he has more important projects. King travels to Selma with other SCLC activists to plan and organize demonstrations that will pressure the president to act on voting legislation. FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover tells Johnson that King is a problem and suggests they disrupt his marriage, which, due to unease around his activism work and his upcoming plans in Selma, has King's wife, Coretta, concerned. King, other SCLC leaders, and black Selma residents march to the registration office to register to vote. After a confrontation in front of the courthouse, a shoving match occurs as the police go into the crowd. Cooper fights back, knocking Sheriff Jim Clark to the ground, leading to the arrest of Cooper, King, and others. Alabama Governor George Wallace speaks out against the movement, and himself and Al Lingo decide to use force at an upcoming night march in Marion, Alabama, using state troopers to assault the marchers. A group of protesters runs into a restaurant to hide, but troopers rush in and beat and shoot Jimmie Lee Jackson. Harassing phone calls with a recording of sexual activity implied to be King and another woman are sent to the King household and lead to an argument with Coretta. She knows it's a fabrication, but the strain of constant death threats has taken its toll on her. As a planned Selma to Montgomery march is about to begin, King talks to Young about delaying it for a day so he can spend some time with his family, but Young convinces King to let the march begin as scheduled without him, saying that he can join later. The marchers, including John Lewis of the SNCC, Hosea Williams of SCLC, and Selma activist Amelia Boynton, cross the Edmund Pettus Bridge and approach a line of state troopers who put on gas masks. The troopers order the marchers to turn back, and when the marchers hold their ground, the troopers attack with clubs, horses, tear gas, and other weapons. Lewis and Boynton are among those badly injured. The attack is shown on a national television, and the wounded are treated at Brown Chapel, the movement's headquarters church. Movement attorney Fred Gray asks federal judge Frank Minnis Johnson to let another attempt at the march go forward. President Johnson demands that King and Wallace cease their activities and sends Assistant Attorney General John Doerr to convince King to postpone the next march. Numerous white Americans, including Viola Liuzu and James Reeb, arrive to join the second march. Marchers cross the bridge again and see the state troopers lined up, but the troopers turn aside to let them pass. King, after praying, turns around and leads the group away, which again draws sharp criticism from SNCC activists. That evening, Reeb is beaten to death by an angry white mob on a street in Selma. After a hearing, Judge Johnson approves the march. President Johnson speaks before a joint session of Congress to ask for a quick passage of a bill to eliminate restrictions on voting, praising the courage of the activists. The march on the highway to Montgomery takes place, and when the marchers reach Montgomery, King delivers a speech on the steps of the state capitol, and that is Selma.
Nice.
Yeah.
Like you mentioned, this movie is mostly historically accurate. Mm-hmm. I did a little bit of research because I wanted to know just how historically accurate it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the only things that were really not kind of so accurate were the timeline between the explosion at the beginning and MLK's Nobel Prize speech. Apparently those mm-hmm. were quite like months apart and not kind of at the same time. that's done for dramatic effect for sure.
Yeah.
And also the TV broadcast of the beatings on the bridge. It was not seen live, but it was seen 5 hours later. Also probably done for dramatic effect, because what do you like do the thing and then show it what hours later, somebody watching it on TV. It works better when they do it like that, I think.
Yeah. Also, I will say for both of those, it's not like the film states that they're happening at the same time. Yeah. And I also kind of disagree with people saying that it's portraying the events as shown live, because the events happen during the day. Mm-hmm. And if you're watching the scenes where they're watching the broadcast, it's night. So it is shown with the time discrepancy. They're just interlaid.
Yeah. Like these were just kind of the nitpicks that I was finding online. Yeah. I think even Ava DuVernay was outspoken about this. She was kind of like, I'm not a historian, like I'm a storyteller.
Yeah.
But she does do a really good job of keeping it historically accurate.
It's really impressive the job that she does and the care that's put into that.
The last kind of big criticism that I've seen online was that they don't really show how much pressure President Johnson was under at the time. He's kind of like seen as an obstacle.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, he is definitely an obstacle to this movement, and that's probably why they showed him as such. But this was also right at the start of Vietnam War activity.
Yeah.
And that is kind of underplayed. And so I think that like a lot of people, especially the people that were like historians for President Johnson, were like, this is unacceptable. Like, I can't have this. This is blah, blah, blah. But yeah. So that was the other large criticism, was that he's underrepresented.
I think if the movie portrayed him as caring more about other like things happening in the States, if anything, that's kind of more generous than him being like, I'm too busy fighting a war in another area of the world that does not concern America. I can't deal with my own citizens. I need to go help people get killed. Like, if anything, it paints him, I think, in a better light that he was busy with other things in the States.
Because like, that war is in itself is hugely controversial. So,
oh yeah, of course. Yeah.
But one thing I do really like about this movie is that when they want you to be shocked, they don't shy away from like the actual shocking events that happened, like especially on the bridge. Like, you could have definitely sugarcoated that and they didn't shy away from just how awful it was. And I guess they were pretty close to like even matching the footage that was shot of like how people were standing and how the whole thing was unfolding. But yeah, like it really grips you.
Yeah. Especially with like the church bombing at the very start of the movie.
Oh, yeah.
They let you know pretty quick that they're not going to shy away from anything and that there is going to be some violence in this movie, because those kids are just on screen blown up. I was not, I have seen this before. That is the most shocking part of the whole movie. And I still wasn't ready for it. I kind of forgot that happened.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I totally forgot about it. And I mean, it helped my experience for sure, because it just, it gets you right in the mood of the movie, because you're seeing MLK get this, you know, Nobel Peace Prize, but at the same time, you see why he's still fighting. It's like, there's still like these just horrible acts of violence and discrimination, murder that's happening, and why he needs to continue. But
And when they have that scene of Oprah Winfrey trying to register to vote, like, have you ever seen some of the tests that they used to give people to register to vote?
No,
they're like impossible because they're not like it's portrayed as you need to know facts about the States. And those are probably some of the questions. But then there's like pages of questions that are just meant to confuse you, where they there was one where it's like there's five circles in a row all touching and you need to draw a line from circle two that goes underneath circle two to around on top of circle four to get to circle five. It's just like stupid stuff that's meant to be like, if you are asked to do this, you're gonna fail. And we're only going to ask black people to do this because we're racists.
Yeah. Oh, and speaking of Tim Roth in this movie, he plays like the slimiest governor. And like, I couldn't imagine like being somebody and trying to like portray that.
Yeah.
Because you would just feel disgusting, but he just looks like, you see it on his face. You just like, you think that he believes that. And it's great acting by Tim Roth. He just looks so slimy.
He looks like an absolute snake. Like, every single politician in this does a great job of making you want to just sock him in the face. They all kill it. No one shies away from that role.
Yeah. And like, pretty much everyone in the movie is well acted. Like, I don't think anyone stands out as being bad. I think the only one that really stands out as being great is David Oyelowo and Tim Roth in his little bits that he has. And also Tom Wilkinson does a pretty good job as President Johnson. But like, I don't think everyone's given much time to shine except for David Oyelowo.
Yeah, and he is so good in this. Yeah. Like, you can tell that this is something he's very passionate about, and it's probably been like working on for a long time.
Yeah.
Because he nails like every word, every pause.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, not that I have really witnessed the actual Martin Luther King Jr.
Yeah.
But you feel like it is him in the movie. It's incredible how he does that.
Well, and he is like different cadences with how he speaks depending on like what kind of performance he's giving. Like if he's talking to Coretta, he's got a different kind of voice pattern than if he's like doing a speech.
Yeah.
And you just see the differences between like his public and private moments, and like it's just great acting. Like he doesn't really have like big explosive cry moments that you would think you'd see on Academy screens, but like the little differences and like the way that he emulated like the real man is great.
Yeah. Like that scene where he's talking to Coretta and, you know, they just phoned him with like a false sex call about him and another woman. And you can tell that his marriage is on the rocks over like his general job field.
Yeah.
Like you can tell he's really upset. And even though he doesn't have the tears on, because I think at some point they convey that he doesn't feel like he can be vulnerable at any point.
Mm.
Yet he gets across so much like the concern that he has for his marriage. Yeah. And there's a lot weighing on him with the fact that at any day he could just die.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and those, the FBI giving that kind of like blackmail tip about it, it wasn't entirely false. Martin Luther King Jr. did sleep around a little bit, but there's historical context as to why that scene wasn't so much of like a blow up is because he had been open with her about it, I guess.
He'd been open with her relationship too. Well,
But like, he had told Coretta that he had, like he confessed basically that he had done this. And so when the FBI tried to basically blackmail or like make like ruin their marriage, like it was kind of a failed attempt because she already knew.
Yeah. So. Yeah. You got to get ahead of the story. That's a good call. That's some good media training right there.
Yeah.
Oh, but man, I was really gripped by how good the shots were. It was a really visually just a very impressive movie that kind of like held my attention that way. And like the score was really good too. It had like a good tension when it needed to. It had a good background when it was supposed to. Like it was just such a well put together movie that I'm still surprised people don't talk about it more, because it's already better than most of like the best picture films that we've seen so far in this series. Mm-hmm. How did Imitation Game get more buzz than this? Because you probably hear more about it afterwards than, I mean, other than the fact that people actually saw Imitation Game. Yeah. I don't think this had many people watching Selma.
That's the thing. I'll get into a fact about that later, but there is a reason, or at least speculation, as to why this maybe didn't do as well.
Yeah.
At the Oscars. But yeah, like one thing that I will say is like, I wasn't riveted the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of kept me at like a stable level of interest.
Yeah.
And like, it's beautiful. Like you said, the score is great. Well acted, well written. I just like never got too excited about it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not to say that I didn't enjoy it. Like I still really enjoy the movie and appreciate every part of it. Like the scene in the prison when David Oyelowo is talking to Coleman Domingo. They shot it in this way where like the light is just kind of touching their face.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's so nice. I don't know. Like it's just like one of those small things that like they didn't make this prison conversation look that striking, but it's just really nice.
And there's a couple scenes like that where I don't like, it's funny that you mentioned it that way. I don't remember their conversation, but I remember that shot. Like, I don't actually recall what they were talking about, but I'm like, I remember watching that and being like, ah, that's pretty.
Yeah.
I wonder what's going on.
Yeah.
I should have put subtitles on actually. And I think like, because it's so striking in its depiction of the violence, at times it's kind of hard to look at.
Yeah.
Like the first bridge crossing is uncomfortable. And when, I think especially when they first like start attacking that night march, that was kind of hard to watch. When they're just laying into that old man, I felt bad.
Well, that whole scene was just so intense. Like you could feel the tension because they're doing this night march and you just know like it's going to go down. Like they don't care that, I mean, it's not in broad daylight anymore. So they can just do whatever they want. And I was so shocked when they do go into that restaurant and they're sitting there and they're waiting. And they don't even like come in and look around. They just come in and just like straight go at them, kill Keith Stanfield's character, and then just walk away. And like, it's, you know, that's probably exactly what happened.
Oh, yeah.
Which, oh,
Because like that person actually died doing that. That wasn't just like they added in something to like demonstrate how things were generally going at that time. Like that was a person who actually died that way that day. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah. Great.
Want to get into some reviews and stuff?
Sure.
Okay, let's do it.
Well, Rotten Tomatoes. What do you think the critics and audiences thought of this movie?
This is tough because whenever it's a movie that's not widely seen, it's hard to get a gauge of where people are going to be at. Mm-hmm. I feel like critics are going to slide this one. 87 is coming to mind. And I feel like audiences, because it's a limited release, the people who were going are probably motivated to go. It's probably going to be a little higher than your average movie. I'm going to say 85.
Critics? 99%.
Ooh, okay, I was really shot. I was going a little low here.
Yeah, very, very high. Audience is 86%.
So nailed that one, though. Yeah. I'm taking that one to the bank.
IMDb 7.5 and Metacritic 80. So, kind of in that 80 to high 90s area.
Yeah, which is well great. Deserved to give that too.
On a budget of $20 million, it made $66.7 million at the worldwide box office in 2015. So obviously it came out on Christmas Day. I don't think they officially counted it in 2014 because it probably wasn't enough.
No, probably not.
And so it did land at 104th place worldwide for 2015.
So. Okay. Yeah. So that's still, you got to imagine that in 6 days of the Christmas break, probably not getting a lot of people coming to watch.
Like a historical biopic over Christmas.
So we're too busy playing with our new toys. We are not going to watch a movie till we're bored before school starts again.
Yeah. But what did we think about this?
More importantly than critics and audiences around the world, what do you and I, two dudes in a basement, think about this movie? Well, Kyle, I'm going to defer to you to start us off here with your enjoyment.
Sure. My enjoyment, I gave this a 3.5. I think I just wasn't hooked the entire, like I was kept kind of mellow the entire movie. But I did enjoy a lot of, I enjoyed a lot of this movie. It's just like, I didn't, like I said earlier, I didn't feel that excited about most of it throughout. Yeah. So, yeah.
It also feels wrong saying that you enjoyed this movie. With the subject matter and severity at play, it feels weird.
Yeah, definitely.
For my enjoyment, I'm going to give this, and I'm going to, this is not my enjoyment score. This is my captivation / intriguement score so that I feel better about it. And I'm going to put that as a 4.
Nice.
What are you giving this for Craft?
Craft was a 4.5.
Oh,
very good.
Money in
honestly,
the bank.
Probably one of the better parts of this movie was just how well it was crafted. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to slide this a 5.
Nice.
But like we're in the neighborhood together. This is a well put together movie.
Definitely.
Execution.
4.5.
Nice.
Again, a lot of acting was great in this movie. Definitely on the shoulders of David Oyelowo. Mm-hmm. But the writing also really comes through. And
Oh, I'm right there with you. I'm also going to slide this a 4.5.
Yeah.
It is very strong. Mm-hmm. Rewatchability.
This is probably another weakness for this movie. It's hard to rewatch.
Yep.
If I was a teacher teaching history, I would say every semester, this is this is heading on. But I am just a man who likes movies. And I'm going to give it a 2.5.
I think that's very fair. I'm going to slide this a 2. I think having watched this twice, I don't particularly want to watch it again. And not because it's bad. It is very good, but it is a heavy movie that's hard to watch. And that's going to make it hurt in its rewatch score.
Definitely.
In general. All right, Kyle, well, you have tidied up a 15 out of 20 for a 75%.
Nice.
And I have stacked in there a 15.5 out of 20 for a 78%.
We're hot.
It's hot. It's going to bring us to our ranking time. Kyle, I'm going to fire off yours.
Yeah, if you could, please.
Top to bottom, Grand Budapest Hotel, Paddington, Captain America, Guardians of the Galaxy, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, Interstellar, Gone Girl, Nightcrawler, Lego, John Wick, Boyhood, Babadook, Imitation Game, Big Hero 6, Foxcatcher, American Sniper, Selma. Where's that going?
I actually didn't think about this earlier. So I'm kind of at a point here, but I think I'm putting it above John Wick. Yes. Above John Wick, below Lego. I think that's where I'm finding it.
Very fair. I mean, I think a lot of the ranking score is kind of affected by the rewatchability. Like
definitely.
That plays heavy into mine.
Yeah.
So Selma is going to be your numero 10-o. For myself, I'll do a quick little read off. I have Grand Budapest, Paddington, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, Interstellar, Gone Girl, Nightcrawler, John Wick, Guardians of the Galaxy, Lego, Babadook, Captain America, Winter Soldier, Boyhood, Big Hero 6, Imitation Game, Foxcatcher, American Sniper. I am going to slide Selma as my number. Ooh, this is a tough one. I had a number, but looking at it now, I'm no longer sure if it is correct. I think I'm going to slide this in as my number 8.
Oh, yeah.
Nice. I feel like I might be using a reorganization on this one later, though.
Yeah.
Because it's so different than every other movie.
Definitely.
Where normally I think, like, how excited am I to watch this thing again?
Yeah.
I'm not for Selma,
yeah,
but it was so good.
It was really good.
Reyno, that is a tentative. That is an asterisk number 8 at the moment. We'll see if it ends the season in that location. But that's going above Guardians of the Galaxy, below John Wick.
Cool.
Yeah.
Good spot.
I believe so.
Letterboxd reviews. Mm-hmm. It has a score of 3.8 out of 5. I struggled to find entertaining high scoring ones.
Yeah, this is a tough one for that.
Yeah.
I'm going to say right now, anyone making a joke in the Letterboxd review has to walk a delicate line.
Yep. All right. This is 4 stars by Demi. Just had a conversation with my friend where she reminded me the reason we saw this movie in theaters was because she was having a bad day and wanted to see something that would make her realize other people had it way worse.
You know what? I respect that. And this was probably a good movie to do that.
Yeah. All right. 1 star by Gregory. Very boring. The trouble with true stories is they just aren't as entertaining as Star Wars.
Star Wars is a true story. Did you not read the long text scrawl at the start of it? It happened.
Yeah.
It was just a long time ago.
In a galaxy far, far away.
Yeah.
So.
Get with the program. Unbelievable. You think George Lucas just made up Jedis? Yeah. The guy who can't even like make a good transition came up with Jedis. Disgusting.
2 stars watched by Manuel. So actually, I have an asterisk here. I got the warning that this review contained spoilers.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'd seen the movie at this point, so I could take it. So their review was, it's a movie.
Oh, man.
Very glad I clicked on this. I can handle the truth for that one.
Oh, man. If you weren't prepared to know what type of media this was, that would be shocking to you.
All right. This is my last one. 2 stars by Alex. A history lesson watered down and spoon fed to the audience, made for white people and filmed like a Geico commercial.
Filmed like a Geico commercial. They weren't even cars.
Also, who's shooting the Geico commercials nowadays? Because they must be flawless. Yeah, like,
that's
they
a
look
big
great.
Budget. Oh, no, there was one car. There was one scene, maybe two, where people were driving. Neither of those times did they discuss car insurance rates.
Yeah.
I don't think this guy watched the movie that closely.
All right. Well, the Academy.
Mm-hmm.
It was nominated for 2 Academy Awards. Can you guess what they were other than Best Picture?
Ooh, that's a tough one. Was it... Would this count as Best Adapted Screenplay?
I don't know.
That's because it's just historical. The way you said, I don't know, makes me think it wasn't nominated for that. So I didn't officially burn a guess on that one. That's a tough... Best Directing?
No.
Okay, I didn't
deserved,
know.
But no.
Yeah. What was it?
Best Original Song for Glory.
Oh, I knew that. Yeah. I don't know why I didn't think of that. Which, okay, I'm not going to lie. I didn't like the song that much.
No. It didn't win.
Yeah.
So it didn't win either awards.
Mm-hmm.
So I have some interesting facts here. One I'll get to after that I only found just leading up to our recording, but here's what I wrote. So director Ava DuVernay and lead actor David Oyelowo's omissions from the 2015 Academy Award nominations sparked an outcry from moviegoers and Hollywood insiders. Their omissions have been credited to the lack of racial diversity in Hollywood. In addition, the film was completed at the end of November 2014, so Paramount was unable to manufacture and send screeners to the members of the Academy in time for all of them to see it before the nomination period closed on January 8th, 2015. Their absence of screeners also accounted for the film's lack of Screen Actors Guild nominations.
Okay, hold on here. So they had to get them to the people at the end of November, and the cutoff was in January. You have a month to watch some movies, my guys. Isn't this like your main thing at that point?
Yeah.
Like if I'm 8 to 4:30 or 9 to 5 watching movies, I think I can see enough to get this one in there.
Yeah. I mean, like it did get to Best Picture, which is good. It's a good feat.
So it had enough screeners to get a Best Picture nominee, but not other ones?
Yeah.
That's weak.
It is actually the only Best Picture Oscar nominee this year to not be nominated for any writing categories.
Yeah. No, I'm mad. It had enough watchers to get a Best Picture nominee, but not for other parts of the movie?
Yeah.
Were they only watching the movie in its entirety? Like, what? This is dumb.
Know. Yeah.
I'm starting to think the Academy... it's a sham.
Yeah. Well, after these nominations came out, it was the first recorded instance of hashtag Oscars so white.
Mm.
So it kind of hit off in this year, but largely hit off after 2016's lack of nominations for any people of color.
Yeah. Well, this was cut and dry. This movie deserved a lot more than that.
Right? Definitely Ava DuVernay and David Oyelowo. Like, that seems obvious to me, and definitely writing too.
Yeah,
but interesting. Dumb.
Well, we're coming back to this at the end of the season definitely. Sure.
Some other notable awards is it won the American Film Institute Movie of the Year, and The Song Glory also won the Golden Globe for Best Original Song and a Grammy, but didn't win the Oscar.
Interesting. Again, I don't know. It wasn't my favorite, but it's not my cup of tea. That's fine. Yeah. I respect everyone who isn't part of the Academy.
Mm-hmm.
Bastards, all of them.
Yeah. All right. Interesting facts time. Tim Roth grew up during the civil rights era. He said he remembers George Wallace and thought of him as a monster and was, quote, amazed at what was coming out of his mouth. So, I mean, he was amazed enough to portray him.
Yeah. Well, that's, I mean, that's a fun circle to come in. It's like us playing any president ever.
One fact I didn't write down, but was interesting to me, was that like a large majority of the actors in leading roles here are English.
That's kind of funny.
David Oyelowo, Tom Wilkinson, Tim Roth. Mm-hmm. They're all, English actors, and they're all in like these major leading roles of American characters.
Yeah, so, that's kind of funny.
Yeah. Cool. Okay, this was the one that relates back to Ava DuVernay rewriting some speeches. So, the Martin Luther King Jr. estate had already licensed the film rights for his civil rights speeches to DreamWorks and Warner Brothers for a still-yet-to-be-produced biopic. For this film, Ava DuVernay had to write new variations for those speeches.
Wow, that's... yeah. Pretty impressive, because those are powerful speeches.
Yeah, and they felt like completely on brand. Like,
oh, yeah.
Exactly. I think like she kind of paraphrased and got the meaning of what every speech was, but just kind of did different wordplay. But yeah, like they hit exactly as they were supposed to hit.
Like they felt like that was a speech that Martin Luther King Jr. could be given.
Yeah.
Good for her.
Exactly. So yeah, really, really good credit to her. I think the difference was that President Johnson, his speech was verbatim because he doesn't have any licensing to his speeches. Yeah. So yeah.
And that also sounds like something he would say, because it was like kind of, it was presidential, but not like polished at all. And like still kind of rough.
So this film was in development for several years with David Oyelowo's name attached. It was not until he worked with Oprah Winfrey on Lee Daniels' The Butler in 2013 and influenced her to produce the film that the project was given the green light. So Oprah's out here giving people movies. Classic Oprah stuff.
Why just throwing them around?
I mentioned Lee Daniels. Lee Daniels was originally set to direct. He was the director of the 2009 Best Picture nominee Precious. The original cast included Hugh Jackman as Sheriff Jim Clark, Liam Neeson as President Johnson, Robert De Niro as Governor George Wallace, Cedric the Entertainer as minister and activist Ralph Abernathy, and Lenny Kravitz as activist Andrew Young. Pretty much an entirely different cast.
Yeah.
As mentioned, David Oyelowo was attached to star as Martin Luther King Jr., and he had apparently fought very hard for 7 years to get the role. When Ava DuVernay took over as director, Oyelowo was the only casting decision she didn't change, which was a good call and also makes sense. Oyelowo was the one who convinced the producers that Ava DuVernay was the right director to take over the project after Lee Daniels stepped down. So could you imagine working for 7 years, advocating for a director, and then she replaces you? Could you imagine? Oh, man.
Oh, man. That would be kind of funny. But no. Very tragic. It would have been an awful call, but like also, man, that would have been a little funny.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm glad we got him. Mm-hmm. He was great in this. And I mean, those 7 years clearly paid off because he was thinking about it. It was in his brain. He was probably practicing that cadence in the mirror for a long time.
Probably all 7 years.
Yeah. Well, any final thoughts on Selma?
I will just repeat, this deserved more relevance than it ever garnered.
Yeah.
It's a really well done movie, and it's kind of shocking that it's not remembered from like the 2014 class.
Definitely. I think this is like a must see, especially if you have any interest in knowing any of the civil rights history, the civil rights movement history. Its portrayal and of these events is like pretty impactful and gives you the whole story, I think, or at least to an extent.
Man, it's kind of funny how many biopics are in the Best Picture nominees.
Yeah, it's pretty classic Academy.
That is,
grabbing stuff. Yeah, they love a good biopic.
We love real stories told falsely. That's the difference. We only like the real stuff when it's fake.
Yeah. All right. Well, I want to thank you all for listening to season 2, episode 16 of Snubs and Dubs. As always, you can find us everywhere at Snubs and Dubs. That's on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Letterboxd, etc. We're also on Good Pods, so make sure to check us out there and join our official Discord. We'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on Selma or on this episode. So please send us a tweet or a message with a question, recommendation, or anything else. I'm also at Kyle Tobias on Twitter, and Jason is at Wendy_Mills. Of course, all of those links are going to be in the show notes. Make sure to leave a 5-star review, share the show to everyone you know, and check back next week for another episode. Here is a sneak peek of the film we're going to talk about.
I belong to the front. You belong to the tail. Know your place. Keep your place.
Those bastards in the front think they own us.
We'll be different when we get there.
What do you say?
We take the engine. And we control the world.
When is the time?
Soon.
That's right. Next time we're talking about Snowpiercer. So make sure to watch it before next episode. Can't wait for you guys to hear it. Thanks for listening. That's a wrap. Bye.
Bye for now.